You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, April 5th, 2021.
Well, the limiting factor right now is the supply of the vaccines. It's really not sites. Assembly Hall could do 10 times as many people.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Sydney Foreman interviews Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton in our weekly segment, A Few Minutes with the Mayor. A Few Minutes with the Mayor features listener-posed questions to Mayor Hamilton on community issues. More in today's feature report.
Also coming up in our legislative update, Governor Holcomb signed a police reform bill into law and said he would veto another bill aimed at stripping away his executive power on public health restrictions. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, April 5th. I'm Aaron Comforti. 1,000 Hoosiers a day are diagnosed with COVID-19 on average right now. The uptick in new cases signals that Indiana is likely entering a fourth wave of the pandemic. It was last October that Indiana first averaged 1,000 cases per day, and at that same time, the state started a steep climb into the third wave. On the Indiana State Department of Health website graph, which charts diagnosed cases, the third wave was so large that it made the first two waves look like ripples in a bathtub. The U.S. as a whole appears to be entering this fourth wave, and while deaths are still near all-time lows from the lull after the last wave, we can expect COVID-19-related deaths to tick up in the next week or two. Deaths usually lag behind cases by about 2 weeks. In the middle of last October, about 2 weeks after the state was averaging about 1,000 new cases per day, Indiana was averaging about 25 deaths per day. With the spring weather, the vaccine rollout underway, and about a fifth of Indiana's population already vaccinated, it can be tempting to let one's guard down and be a little lax on COVID-19 safety guidelines, but local and national health officials have voiced concerns that this fourth wave could be quite severe. In the weekly COVID-19 press conference hosted by the City of Bloomington last Friday, Indiana University Assistant Vice President Kirk White announced that this week the university was set to vaccinate 7,000 people. Until now, that number had been closer to 700. Kinzer Flats, a new 50-unit apartment complex in Bloomington for people without housing, is just opening now. The project is run by Centerstone, a national community health organization. The project is opening behind schedule, but for people moving in, it will serve as a permanent low-cost housing option costing $50 a month. That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton reported 3 new positive COVID-19 cases among city employees at the April 2nd COVID-19 press conference. Monroe County Health Commissioner Penny Caudle addressed the spike in positive cases.
The county has seen an increase in cases per 100,000. We reached 128 per 100,000 this week on the metrics map. A month ago, we had dropped down to 63 per 100,000, and we had a single day where, when we calculated it, we were as low as 49 per 100,000. So we are definitely seeing an increase. When we look at February 3rd, just to kind of put things in perspective, on February 3rd, we had 171 cases per 100,000. On March 3rd, we had 63. And on March 31st, we were back up to 128.
Caudill stated the OptumServe and Morton Street COVID testing sites will remain open, despite an increased number of vaccinations.
In today's legislative update, Governor Eric Holcomb says he plans to veto a bill designed to limit his emergency powers. House Bill 1123 would allow the Indiana General Assembly to convene for a special session if the governor declares a public health emergency. The bill would also allow the General Assembly to regulate how the state spends federal stimulus money if in session. If not in session, the bill would require a review by the State Budget Committee. All in all, this bill was one of a dozen bills designed to strip away Governor Holcomb's executive authority when it comes to public health emergencies. Several members of the Holcomb administration have testified against the bill. Holcomb and his supporters argue that the legislation would limit the governor's ability to act quickly during a public health crisis. Lawmakers who support the bill say they are looking for proper representation when it comes to enacting public health restrictions. State Senator Susan Glick, a Republican from LaGrange, said, quote, "I'm not saying the governor has done anything radically wrong. I'm asking for our seat at the table," end quote. Former Indiana Supreme Court Justice Frank Sullivan Jr. testified against the bill. He said in his testimony, quote, "I'm here to implore you that if you think the governor's power to handle emergencies needs to be reduced, to do so in a way that the Constitution permits. You've got plenty of options in that regard. And if you decide that the legislature does need power that the Constitution does not give, the right way to do that is by a constitutional amendment and not an unconstitutional bill," end quote. House Bill 1123 passed through the State House of Representatives on February 9th in a 69-27 vote. Since then, it has passed the Senate Committee on Rules and Legislative Procedures after a third reading. The bill may arrive at the governor's desk by Monday, April 5th. Again, Governor Holcomb says he will veto House Bill 1123. Since he took office in 2017, Holcomb has only vetoed one piece of legislation.
In other State House news, on Thursday, Governor Eric Holcomb signed a police reform bill into law that would require de-escalation training for police officers. House Bill 1006 establishes de-escalation training, allows the State Law Enforcement Training Board to decertify an officer accused of misconduct, and limits the use of chokeholds by police officers. It also states that an officer who turns off a body-worn camera with the intent to conceal a criminal act commits a Class A misdemeanor. Moreover, it requires an agency hiring a police officer to request the officer's employment record. The bill drew bipartisan support and passed through both the House and Senate with unanimous support. Before the bill had passed out of committee, WFHB talked to Chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus and State Representative Robin Shackelford about the bill.
We want to see people come up with an alternative with dealing with the community versus using force. We've seen in several cases, whether if it's been in Indianapolis or outside of Indianapolis, where a law officer is involved with an altercation or maybe involved in a shooting with a community member, and then they're not charged. They may get time off while the case is pending. But what this decertification does, it says that if you are charged or even if you're not charged, you can be decertified.
Representative Shackelford co-authored the bill alongside several of her colleagues, which include both Republicans and Democrats. It was originally authored by Republican Representative Gregory Sturwald. Shackelford explained how this bipartisan bill came together to generate support across both sides of the aisle.
So it all came from stemming from the protests that happened this summer, stemming from that advocacy that the community of all different shades were saying something needs to change as they watch African Americans get murdered in the street by law enforcement, get knocked down, get beat. Everyone was, I would say, now moved for this movement that there be a change. The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus then met with several people in the community. We held town halls. We met with law enforcement, the prosecutors, judges, sheriff's association, trying to get a feel of what legislation should look like. During that time, we also went with the speaker and said, can we get some type of task force put together, an emergency task force, like we did for the health disparities? So he wasn't too on board with that, but what he did give us was Representative Sturwald. He said, I will put Representative Sturwald in charge of coming up with some type of legislation that we all can agree on. And that is how it began. And he started meeting with us, meeting with the same individuals, and it became a collaboration on what can we all agree on. We know IBLC may have a whole list of things that we wanted on our agenda, which probably included almost 40 bills. But 1006 is that collaboration, that compromise of things that both sides can agree on.
The law received endorsements from law enforcement, including the State Fraternal Order of Police, the Indiana Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Indiana Sheriff's Association. It also received support from the NAACP, the Indianapolis Urban League, and members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus.
Monroe County Commissioners approved a resolution regarding housing as a human right during their March 31st meeting. Affordable Housing Advisory Commission member Vox Booker read the resolution.
By recognizing housing as a basic human right, this resolution established a vision for a community that empowers people of all ages, abilities, income, and identities with access to safe and stable housing so that they may live and thrive in Monroe County. Whereas safe and affordable housing equates to better health outcomes, while households who are cost burdened cannot adequately spend money on nutritious food and healthcare costs, bringing down healthcare outcomes and impeding child development. Whereas the availability of affordable housing supports vulnerable populations, prevents crowding, limits exposure to environmental toxins, and increases the feasibility of escape and survival from domestic violence. Whereas studies show that stable, long-term housing is the single most important factor in a person's ability to recover from struggles with employment, substance abuse, and mental or physical illness. Whereas unemployment, poverty, and housing instability are broader systemic issues. Whereas affordable and accessible housing promotes opportunities for increased independence for people with disabilities. Whereas unstable housing causes children to suffer from slow development, emotional difficulties, and underachievement in education. Whereas the lack of affordable housing will ripple through our community for generations, not only in health outcomes, but also financial impacts. Whereas the Monroe County Human Rights Ordinance promotes equal opportunity in employment, housing, education, and access to public accommodation, regardless of race, religion, color, sex, national origin, ancestry, sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, housing status, or status as a veteran, and prohibits familial status discrimination in housing. Whereas the human right to housing includes legal security of tenure, availability of services and infrastructure, affordability, habitability, accessibility, location, and cultural adequacy.
Booker mentioned the resolution committed Monroe County to the advancement of affordable housing opportunities. Commissioner Lee Jones spoke of the importance of stable housing and making community members feel safe.
Monroe County Commissioners approved extended services for compliance officers. County Health Administrator Penny Caudle spoke during their March 31st meeting.
We would like to renew it. And actually, Margie had just sent a draft. My suggestion would be if we could do kind of a month to month, maybe up to through June, and then we could terminate it, either party could terminate early if we needed to. So it would prevent us having to come back every month to renew it. And hopefully once our numbers are good and the regulations go away, we won't need them and we would be able to end that early. I'm not sure if Margie's on here or not, but that's our proposal. We would like to kind of extend it and make it just a little bit easier to manage and stop when we're ready.
Chamber of Commerce member Jim Shelton stated compliance officers allowed business to not have to confront customers.
The Bloomington City Council Land Use Committee sent a positive recommendation to full council for proposed development on Hillside Drive. Architect Doug Bruce stated the proposed multi-building complex next to Switchyard Park had been designed environmentally conscious during their March 31st meeting.
We are looking at the townhomes being designed under the LEED for Homes certification and all of the commercial buildings being designed under a LEED Silver. I did some research this week on the USGBC website because it was brought up that, well, there's all kinds of development projects that are just as green as this, and I completely beg to differ. There are 9 Indiana University buildings that are LEED certified or above, and all I could find were 8 other buildings that were not Indiana University buildings. This PUD amendment in itself brings 7 more buildings to that. So not every development, they might be designed as green, but they aren't pushing LEED certification, and we're making that a requirement for anything that's to be built here.
Bruce stated construction would include apartments, townhomes, and commercial spaces. He mentioned buildings would connect to the Beeline Trail. Planner Eric Grulich stated 15% of living units would be affordable living. Councilwoman Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked Bruce about affordable unit distribution.
Do you know yet how you would distribute between townhomes and rental units, how you would distribute the affordable units?
We were just discussing that. There would probably be a reduction in price in the town. That would be something we'd have to work out. But Jeff has had some experience with something like that on another project through the city. So that's probably how we would have to handle that.
So you would do some of the reduced cost units would be townhomes and some would be apartments. Is that right, Mr. Bruce?
Can you hear us?
Are you there?
I couldn't hear a response to my specific question.
But... Correct.
Correct? Okay.
Councilmember Matt Flaherty suggested the developers accept housing vouchers. Bruce stated no official timeline was proposed for the development. Council members considered a reasonable condition to require a cool or vegetated roof on each of the new buildings. Environmental Commission member Andrew Gunther stated green roofs are not suitable replacements.
With all due respect, the Environmental Commission does not consider vegetated or cool roof methods to be an appropriate replacement for lost green space. Green space is more likely to be well maintained, interacted with by residents, and effectively mitigate the impacts of climate change than green roofs. While undoubtedly a benefit to the environment and something the Environmental Commission wishes to see incorporated in more projects of this scale, we caution the council from conflating green roofs with an acceptable loss of green space. We do not believe the impact is a 1-to-1 ratio. Rather, we believe we will still suffer a net loss of benefits to accompany green space. Additionally, cool roofs, while admirable in their goal, do not replace green space by most measures. While it would help mitigate the heat island impact and assist in lowering utility costs, cool roofs do not replace green space in regards to runoff, habitat, native species, or a plethora of other benefits afforded by green space. Additionally, cool roofs tend to be cheaper, making them more attractive to petitioners. And we believe petitioners are more likely to choose the economically viable option of cool roof technology over green roofs, meaning the environmental benefit of Councilmember Solidarity proposal is weakened even further when it comes to green space.
Council member Stephen Volan stated the development would replace a warehouse, not green space. Council members approved the reasonable condition. Council members will discuss the development during their next city council at the whole meeting.
Now it's time for A Few Minutes with the Mayor, your weekly segment where WFHB asks Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton questions on community issues. In today's segment, WFHB Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman talks to Hamilton about vaccine appointments, a recent increase in positive COVID-19 cases, and on the Plan Commission's approval of conditional uses of multiplexes. All that and more in today's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions.
First question that I have is, what advice do you have for people who are having trouble finding vaccine appointments in Bloomington?
Persistence, I guess, is the main advice. I know it can be tricky. I've done that myself for family members, and it's not the most efficient system, perhaps. But if you just keep looking, keep trying, you will find it. I know people sometimes go to other jurisdictions, other cities nearby that maybe have less of a demand. I know several people who've gone to cities within an hour of here. You also can look for the mass vaccination sites where you can get a one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine, usually. But there's no magic answer. It's just persistence on the website, looking for sites and continuing to refresh and try. If you do have a lot of trouble on the website, you can always call 211 and you can talk to a person who can help you. But I do think within a few weeks, I would not be surprised if we start to see vaccines chasing people rather than people chasing vaccines as the numbers of vaccines increase and more people who have chosen to get vaccinated are replaced by people who aren't sure they want to be vaccinated. So that's going to be a big challenge.
Very recently, the Assembly Hall opened up as a vaccination site as well, which I imagine will probably help with that ability to get appointments scheduled. Are there any other plans to have additional vaccine sites in Bloomington? Or do you feel like we are good to go? It's just going to be a matter of making sure everybody gets scheduled.
Well, the limiting factor right now is the supply of the vaccines. It's really not sites. Assembly Hall could do 10 times as many people in a day or in a week than they do now if they had more vaccine. It's really the supply of the doses that is driving the availability. I think as more doses are available, and even this week, we expect to have thousands more doses this week, we hope, at IU's site. Pharmacies are getting our sites. The key, though, is getting more vaccine. And we do expect to get more vaccine in the months ahead. And we may see some more sites. You may see larger companies doing their own vaccinations, possibly. But the main limiting factor is actually the delivery of the dosages to our community and making sure that number keeps going up.
The next question is, positive cases of COVID-19 are on the rise again in Bloomington, seeing about a two-week upward trend. How do you see this affecting reopening in Bloomington?
Well, we're very concerned about this trend. We're not panicked, but we're definitely very concerned. We really are. I think the epidemiologists accurately describe we're in a race between the vaccinations and the variants, because the variants are spreading more quickly and they're more infectious at the same time that we're getting more people vaccinated. And that's kind of a race. Who's going to win? Who's getting ahead? Right now, we're seeing a little bump in the number of infections, which means the variants are getting ahead. We saw a really bad example of that in Michigan, our neighboring state, which went from 1,000 cases a day to 6,000 cases a day in a period of a few weeks. The variant was dramatically winning the race against the vaccinations. So I'm very concerned about it, as our health department is. I don't think we will see locally relaxations. I hope not in the short run. I think we really have to stay the course on what has been working, which is masking and physical distancing and good hygiene that is so important to protect against the spread of the infection, because we have seen some upticks and that's of real concern.
Well, our next question then is, the Plan Commission approved conditional uses of multiplexes in some of the core neighborhoods in Bloomington during their March 29th meeting. How do you see this affecting the Bloomington locals in those core neighborhoods, or even people outside wanting to move into the core neighborhoods?
Well, the Unified Development Ordinance, which is in front of the Plan Commission for a little bit longer, will soon go to the City Council. That's the overall zoning plan for the city. It's being reviewed now. It's been about 15 years since it was updated in a significant way like this. So that's a big deal. There's a lot of changes. There's mapping and there's new district zoning districts, including one issue that has gotten a lot of attention among many issues is the approval of what are called plexes, duplexes, triplexes, quads. Planners call them the missing middle of housing. In between a single family home on a single family lot and a significantly sized multifamily building, there's this middle ground of duplexes or triplexes or co-op housing or co-housing. And I think overall the view is that that is important to allow and to see how it develops in the community. Since World War II, there's been a kind of a real focus on the other two ends of single-family homes and multifamily apartments. But if you look before World War II, much of our community developed with a richer texture. There's a lot to think about with this. It's important for inclusiveness and pricing and the availability of more kinds of housing that are in core neighborhoods and close to the center of action. There's also a sustainability aspect to it, helping more people live on the best walkable, bikeable, least carbon impact locations. So I think it's a really good debate. The Plan Commission tweaked and changed some of the proposals. It'll now go to City Council. And there are different views from different people and different areas and different ages and different approaches to the city. And that's what democracy looks like. There's a lot of give and take and back and forth. And we hope it to be completed by late April or May. We hope the City Council will be able to deal with all this and get it in place. The UDO really tries to address several things at once. It tries to help undergraduate students who live off campus live in the right places. For example, it creates a new student housing zone, if you will, for quite dense student housing focused on undergraduates nearer campus. It eliminates a bunch of kind of one-off zoning areas, over 100 of them in the city that are legacies over the last few decades, to create more predictability. And it does try to support inclusion, both economic, racial, age, and stage in all neighborhoods of the city, and sustainability in all neighborhoods of the city. And those are big goals. So there's definitely going to be a lot of debate about how best to do it.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Jake Jacobson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti, Jake Jacobson, Cade Young, and Sydney Foreman, in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sydney Foreman.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB News, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast at WFHB.org.
The WFHB Local News is available as a podcast. Just search our call letters WFHB wherever you find your podcasts. Subscribe and never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB Community Radio.
Listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. we invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at wfhb.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,